Welcome to the Great Security Debate. This show has experts taking sides to help broaden understanding of a topic. Therefore, it's safe to say that the views expressed are not necessarily those of the people we work with or for. Heck, they may not even represent our own views as we take a position for the sake of the debate. Our website is greatsecuritydebate.net, and you can contact us via email at feedback@greatsecuritydebate.net or on Twitter @securitydebate. Now, let's join the debate already in progress.
I think it was months ago when I put out the post about, hey, now's the, there's no better time to come to Michigan, you know, if you're in tech, you know, Michigan, right. Michigan, right? And I haven't seen, I have seen that there have been announcements with people taking buyouts from some of the big auto companies, which means you're shrinking budgets, which is kind of unfortunate, but understandable. But when you have this much talent leaving the tech industry on different sides of the coast, East Coast, West Coast, if you did have the budgets to bring in some of that talent right now, I mean, that there's some people that are wide open to it. And one thing that I read that I guess I didn't understand, and Dan, you might have some perspective on this, and Eric as well, but there's a, I was seeing a lot of messaging and people being supportive on it, but from an immigration policy standpoint, if you were over here working on a visa, you only have 60 days once you lose your job to find a new job that will carry that visa over. But the job description has to literally be like the same, right? So if you were a data scientist, you couldn't just go over and do like cybersecurity infrastructure, right? Like it would have to be data scientist role, or the company would have to find a way to give you that title, right? If they really wanted to keep you. I
mean, look, in our industry, we're great at buzzword packing. I'm sure we could put that into a job rec, make that real easy.
Maybe that's a benefit of acronyms. Like if you could give every job an acronym, then you could just repackage it. Like, what do you mean, data scientist? That was data scientist.
Remember, you're submitting this to the U.S. government, who is the ultimate in acronyms.
Yeah.
We can't play at the professional level, I promise you.
That is true. That's I mean, thinking about it, I loved your post about the changing that as big technology has massive layoffs and they try to kind of refit to where they're going. I'm trying to map that back to auto. My biggest concern, and this is, we were actually talking about this in class over the weekend. One of the biggest concerns I still have is you still see a lot of companies that are under this the guise of, we're trying to get back to normal, right? Which means for us, getting back to normal means butts in seats. And that doesn't work. You're not going to get all these in office seats, like workplace office. Right. And we're starting to see a lot of companies that are starting to head in that direction, right? You've kind of got a lot of polar opposites. You've got some of the smaller, more nimble, agile companies that are starting to say,
hey, full remote.
Right. which is great. And then you've got Elon Musk that, hey, sleep in the office, essentially. Right. And this whole idea of getting back to a normal, we've got to get past that crap. We've now changed. The world has changed around us. Expectations, what individuals want. That's why I keep saying it's the great realization. Many people have realized what is actually more important to them. And Dan, you sent a great article last night about kind of the shrinking down of the amount of time certain types or the certain echelon of people are spending in kind of applying to the job, right? The time they're spending on the job, realizing family, mental health, other things are equally as important, if not more important, that if we try to get back to this where we once were, we're going to lose at the end of the day. We are sitting on the verge, and maybe we're a little further than that, that we have to write our new normal. But that also, I think, has a lot of leadership that's kind of on edge, right? That they don't know. It's uncharted territory. We're still trying to figure out. And it's going to harm us in the long run if we can't figure this out.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. I can't help but agree with that. And yeah, the article was definitely and I put it in the show notes. It's definitely good because it does talk about a rebaselining of things, and whether or not companies will admit it to themselves, their employees are rebaselining themselves.
Right.
So it's hard, you know, the ostrich syndrome isn't going to work. And now it'll work in some industries and it'll work in some geographies that are more amenable to it. But as a universal rule, it's definitely not. But, you know, let's say you're in one of those organizations and you've got to, well, in any organization, one of the things that we hear a lot about, and I'd love your thoughts on, is, you know, growth inside the company. Now, I mean, we've talked a lot here about how to get into cybersecurity, information security, technology, compliance, ethics, whatever. It's hard to get in. Now you're in. You're doing some work in there. You've crossed that original horror of interviews and ghosting, and you've got that first job, and you've got it, and you're starting to work forward. How do you grow yourself inside those roles? And I think I'd like to spend some time on that today, because it's a growing topic.
Yeah.
Well, one thing I would say too is, and this is for anybody, you got in, you got the role, and everybody has their personal opinions and their personal goals. Personal opinions meaning, I've learned so much over the last 2 years. I'm more valuable than I was 2 years. 2 years ago, my company needs to show me how valuable I am. And that's something that inner, you know, call it your demon or your inner angel is telling you, right? And it's both good and bad. The reason I say that is, on the bad side, be careful how you go back to your employer and try to verbalize that. And what I mean by that is, if you're in the position, you've been there for 2 years, maybe a year, and you've learned a lot. And let's say you were, I'll use an example as a consultant, not a consultant, but you were, what's the word I'm looking for? Somebody brought you in from an outside company. You worked there for contract employee. You worked there for a year as a contract employee. They hired you full time. They obviously got a pretty good price on you because you wanted the position. It's entry level. But now in the next 2 years, you've managed to either A, get yourself into like a lead role on the SOC, right? Your security operations center. Or maybe it's another position in infrastructure. When you go back to your employer and you tell them, hey, look, I've done this. I am valuable. I. Careful how you say I. Go back to them and say, I feel like the company has taught me a lot over the last 2 years. The company put me in a position to be successful here. I've been able to make great relationships with my team. While I wouldn't like to leave my team and continue to grow there, I'd like to take on more responsibility because I feel that I'm worth more doing more for the company. And what you've done now is you've positioned yourself to tell them, I'm asking for more, but I'm telling you I'm willing to do more.
Right.
Right. Mm-hmm. And in doing so, they may carve out a new role for you. And that role will maybe have a little bit of leadership where one or two people are reporting to you. And in the end, it's going to take more out of you to do that role, but then you'll grow even more. So when you go to position yourself as Mr. Valuable, the ask isn't, I am this, I learned that, I'm worth more, or else maybe I'm leaving. And don't ever say that you talked to other companies and they told you how much you're worth. Not a good move.
Yeah, up as a threat.
Yes. So how do you position it? You let your boss know that you guys have taught me so much and you guys have invested a lot of time into me. Would you be willing to invest more and carve out maybe an additional role or something else I can do so I can earn more money, right? It's letting them know that you want more money and you're willing to do a little more, right? And some people may say, Brian, you're wrong. You shouldn't have to tell them you're going to do more to earn more. Okay. But then how do you position that, right, where it's not threatening, but it's also letting them know that you believe you're worth more?
Yeah, I have many, many thoughts. So, everything you said, Brian, I know this is a shock. So as the elder statesman of the group, I'm going to need to turn into the grumpy old Gen Xer for a second and talk about life before and life now.
Is that how we're going to identify ourselves before jumping in the generation that we're part of?
Life before Gen X, life after Gen X.
So bear with me. Hi, friends. It's Dan here. I want to tell you a little story. So just from a... I got to edit. This is just dumb and fun, but I'm going to edit this out.
I think it's awesome.
Hi, friends. I'd like to tell you a story. So
drop the camera in closer.
Come in closer. No closer.
Sit,
too close.
Take a seat. Sit down.
All right. I need to jump in for a second. I am the elder statesman of the three of us. There's no honor in that, just merely that I have my knees hurt more. But I'll tell you, I come from Generation X. I have lived through quite a number of generations before us as bosses, as companies, as company leaders, etc. And right now, to you, my younger friends, there are still Gen X and boomers in leadership roles. So while it is cool, while it is fun, while it is the hip and happening thing to feel entitled to things, it's not going to work. Not in every case, and it may and will backfire. For all the things that Brian just said, it's not about, I've been here a year, I need to be promoted for my own, for my own morale. I saw there was an article come out after Google's layoffs this week in which people didn't feel they could be emotionally safe after having been laid off. I apologize. I am a very compassionate person, but I also think people need to come to some realities about work. One, it's a job. It is not your life. Two, Jonathan Feldman on Mentor Corps made the best statement ever. Your company will not love you back. Must remember that. Three, it's a bi-directional relationship. You provide services. The company provides pay. That's how it works. So to Brian's point, the more you do, the more you can provide to the organization, the better the pay can be, the better the responsibility can be. And with that comes other benefits. And that's great. But just having sat in the chair for a year doesn't automatically mean that you deserve something more. Please consider that in the method in which you go to ask for things. To ask, not demand. To never do ultimatums. Ultimatums will always backfire on you.
Right.
So there's all sorts of these things that until the world is rid of us pesky Gen X and the people older than me, keep these things in mind. I think they're still, whether we like them or not, whether people like them or not, they are still the reality of business. And I think some of this is driving the return to off the forced return to office, because that's the way we like it, and things like that. So now it's the end of Dan's an old fart diatribe. We resume the rest of our show.
Does this mean that we got to transition? We're coming off the front porch from the guy that's yelling us to get off his lawn and now kind of moving to the millennial that's walking down the sidewalk.
Going, okay, boomer.
No, you can't say that. It's a hate crime now.
Before,
welcome to the show, Eric Willie walking down the...
I mean, I really do think that there is a generational component to this, whether we like it or not. There are generational dynamics at play. We've come up through very different lifestyles. I admit, I did not come into work. I was not starting my career during two successive downturns in economies.
Right.
I started my working career in the dot-com booms, and it was wonderful, and we got to learn certain things. I know life is different if you're coming at a different stage, but realize the game you're playing in and be enlightened enough to know the room, read the room, read the players, right, and play accordingly. Now yeah, so, I'm really done shaking my fist.
So I will say, so from a millennial's point of view, because I definitely agree with you. And one of the phrases that I've always liked is you deserve nothing. Right. And I keep getting these Facebook ads for the metal work of art. And there's a phrase on there, essentially, you get what you work for type deal. And I think that mentality has got to be forefront at the front
unless
of your mind.
Your Facebook, right? Then you get what you've stolen from people's data.
Well, yeah, that's different. Just talking about their ad service. But I do think some of the mentality is shifting, Dan, as you look at some of the prior generations getting into millennials and now into Gen Z, that there's a disconnect on the passion and my life is defined by my company. No, that my life is actually defined by my family, by religion, by external things that make me who I am, and that I just have a job. But taking a step back, because I liked a lot of what Brian said as well around kind of the job and kind of not using the word. I hate the word I. That one, for some reason, there's something when that gets used. It just, it's like a cringeworthy moment. But taking a step back for that, I think it's good to realize that, and this is something I'd like to talk to team through, that I cannot champion your career. That's not my role from a leadership perspective. So what does that mean from an employee standpoint, from an employee trying to grow themselves, that they have to take a step back and answer for themselves where they want to be? If you don't know where you want to go, I can't help you get there. You have to know the journey. You have to know the end state. And then together we can chart a map for that. So answer that question first. And as we put that in the realm of security, I think this is, I've had this conversation with a number of people that have asked, you know, what's it like to be a CISO, or how do I get to being a CISO? And I go, number one, it starts with you having to answer the philosophical question on, do you want to continue down the highly technical road, or do you want to get into more leadership, people skills, kind of the getting into the soft skills? And until you answer that question, you don't know where you're going. And that has to be answered first.
Yeah, you have to take the financial part out of it. And I'm going with that is, if you want to be the CISO, why do you want to be? Ask why five times, right? You'll get to the root cause of most behavior, right? Or problems. So why do I want to be that? If it's because I want to move up to make more pay, great. But understand that also comes with managing people, managing emotions. And if that's not something A, you're good at, or B, you want to do, you might want to rethink that. One thing I also want to put out there is, when you look at the average age that people are reproducing now, right? Settling down, having families, and then having children. It's later in life than compared to, and Dan, as you were saying, go back generations, right? Go back to baby boomers, keep going back further. At the age of what your parents decided to reproduce and have kids. And where I'm going with this is, there's a level of empathy and responsibility. The idea of, when people, and I've heard this come up too, even within my own family, of, yeah, but if you did this, you could grow the business this much more. You could make this, you know, go nationwide, or you could grow and expand, right? And I've heard different responses from different people at different ages, where even an uncle of mine said, yeah, but that's not my goal. My goal has always been how to provide for my family.
Right.
And that comes from someone that's 55 years old, right? His goal isn't to have the biggest business. His goal was to provide for his family, and where he was at, and as it was growing, that was good enough, right? What is good enough for you? So early on in your career, if your idea of success is to continue to grow, right? How big is that pot for you, and what's important to you? Because when you have a family, the idea of how do I support them becomes one of the most important things. It's not just support, it's protect them. And that also comes with job security. So when you go in to have those conversations, somebody having the conversation of wanting more money when he also has to be responsible for 4 mouths to feed or 3 mouths to feed is different from someone that doesn't. It goes back to risk. The risk there is, well, if I lose the job, I have enough to survive on myself before I find the next thing I'm going to do, or I can go do this part time.
Right.
But when you're supporting a family, those goals are different. You have to think about that when you're going into it. What's important to you today may not be important to you 5 years, 10 years down the road. Right. Well, so it's perspective.
It is. Yeah. And enter the hashtag GSD book club. That's why the Little Giants really resonated with me. Right. And then if we take a step back, so Little Giants was all about companies that decided that we're not going to sell out. We know who we are, and therefore we're good only growing to a certain capacity, because past a certain point, we have to change what makes us who we are. So that's looking at it from a company lens. But then if you look at it from an individual lens, you get into true north. And what you're talking about, Brian, on being authentic, and to be an authentic leader means that you have to define who you are, what you stand for, and what you're not willing to waver on, right? What is core to you? And that is a critical element to weigh out as you're kind of charting this journey. And I like something Earl Doobie said, and it was a CSA event, and it was kind of a fireside chat. And I think the topic was something about becoming a CISO, something along those lines. He kind of looked out into the crowd and goes, something to the effect of, not everybody wants to really become a CISO, right? At the initial blush, it sounds great, right? You're running the security organization, that you've got a number of people working for you. It's not all roses at the end of it. There's a lot that comes with it. And again, you start to detach yourself from some of the technology. You start to grow into more of the kind of political aspects of organizations. There is a lot more than just the day-to-day technology and security that comes with it. And with many organizations, it could be a bit of a grind. You know, I know we all know CISOs around us that it's not an easy road.
I want to go back to something you said, Brian, around, you know, providing for your family. And I think that's there is a money aspect to it too. Talk about, you know, give and return. So, you know, with that in mind, we have often, and I refuse to pursue the idea that this discussion of quiet quitting, that whole thing has, thank God, gone. But one of the things that came out of it was around quiet promotion, with this concept that within companies, this has happened for long times, is that people are having roles added to them, but not being equivalently compensated for the new things they're taking on. And I think that is an important case where you need to balance out taking on new responsibilities to demonstrate that you can, but not becoming a chump that takes on new things and doesn't ever get the promotion. I have lots of stories of friends that, you know, have over 5 years have taken on, you know, four other people's full roles because they've left the organization or changed or gone on to other things, and have said, and nothing has been done about it. So in those cases, again, this is not about entitlement. This is about, hey, I've been doing this. I'm actually doing a very different job. So, you know, politely coming in and showing the evidence that says I was doing this, I'm now doing this. Asking for differences in pay to compensate for additional roles is absolutely a must. So I think one thing we should ever stop thinking about, that bi-directional balance trade of services for compensation.
That's where who you work for matters, right? So when you're going to look for a new position, right, who you work for, and if you trust that you put that together and show them that it's going to do something, right? Or 2023, you're going to be asked to do more with less, right? What does that mean? Could mean a handful of things. It could mean that your boss comes to you and does ask you to do more. And for the time being, it's going to be for less. But do you trust when we come out of this that either A, I'm going to be compensated, or maybe they're going to carve out a new role or something? Those are very honest conversations that you should be able to have with your manager. And if you can't, right, that's an issue. And you got to figure out how to have that conversation with them. So going back to at the different level you're at, 1 year, 2 year, 3 year, you've been working for 5 years, right? Being able to have those conversations. And Eric, when you mentioned the book club, what was the book I was just reading recently that we were just talking about? Not Little Giants, but Never Split the Difference, right?
Yeah. Oh, yes.
Yeah. If you're going to be able to have those conversations, they even talk about that within marriages, right? Those are those honest, difficult conversations, and you have to be willing to have those, right? And learning how to have those difficult conversations, whether you're an introvert or extrovert, because even if you're an extrovert, you may think you're having the conversation well, because in your head, everything that comes out of your mouth is great. You're probably not very good at it, where the introvert will spend time thinking about it. God knows, there's things that have come out of my mouth that I absolutely 100% unequivocally regret. Right?
I'm shocked by this.
I was going to say something else, but there I go. Lessons learned. But those are the things where those little attributes that we're not teaching today. And I thought it was good that I was seeing some announcements around that they're actually going to put in some financial education classes for people to understand how to balance a checkbook or their bank accounts or taxes. I can't remember what it was. And
the state of Michigan recently, mid last year, is one of a number of states now that requires that as part of a graduation requirement from high school, which I celebrate, because the amount of people that came out book smart from high school but couldn't balance a damn checkbook or understand that money going in has to be greater than money going out. Applause to all the states that are passing this and making this a requirement.
Oh, go ahead, Eric, because I was going to say that part of it too makes even more sense as you get into your business role, because now you also start to look at the financial aspect of it, of what you do today and what you'll do tomorrow.
Right.
And it's more planning. It's thinking about your actions before you do it. And then if you can learn how to address those difficult conversations, right? And that's why even having a mentor, right? Eric, you're a CISO, right? Dan, you're a CISO. Not just about coming in. It's not just about coming in and having a conversation with you about how to be a CISO. It's what things do I need to know or that are important to me to get there? Yeah. Some of those honest conversations, right? And people don't think about that aspect of it.
It is. Yeah, it is true. And I want to make sure that we don't just glaze over it. I know we've kind of mentioned that they can be difficult conversations. And for a lot of people, there is a lot of learning that goes into, there's a lot of hesitation that goes into having those conversations. There's a lot of pent up emotion around it and everything. And I'll throw in another book, Crucial Conversations. That was one that I had coming up in leadership training that is great, that kind of walks you through how to frame, how to have those conversations, that they're not easy at all. But make sure you think about it beforehand, because what you don't want is what Brian was talking about, where you just come over the top. I deserve this. I did this. That is not going to win anybody over at the end of the day.
And actually, I'll pair on to that, the brother book, which is Crucial Confrontations, because one quickly becomes the other if you're not careful.
Yeah. And Eric, you made a great point about when to use the word I and when not to. And for anyone listening, when you're writing an email, practice, because when you begin to talk, it'll carry over to that. Try to figure out a way not to use I and you in email and use the company name, right? Instead of saying, right, like, well, what you guys did. No, he didn't do that, right? Don't say, well, you did this. No, say, pick the company name. Say, well, Wisconsin Badgers did this. What we would like to say, and Dan, I'm saying that because I'm looking at your shirt, figuring out how to say that, right? And not use the word I and you. And then when you do use the word I and you as a label, right? Do it where it's applying empathy, right? Where you're saying, you know, I appreciate the amount of time that you took with me. And I think it's benefited the company X. I can go back and give a great example when I was very youthful and I got put into an assistant manager's role and I felt very entitled and empowered. And there was a huge back and forth with another company. And we were not being paid on time and it had gone over 90 days. And just from the conversations around me, I believe I had the power to tell them, you know what, we're not shipping. And I used the word, we're not shipping to you. That person picked up the phone and said to me, are you really not going to ship? And I said, yes. Immediately, the big customer was involved. And in this case, it was Toyota. Calling our top management that said, Brian Schneebly just said he is not going to, or that your company, and I worked for Aisha at the time, is not going to ship. Is this correct? My management pulled me into a room and so fast and said, Brian, is Brian not shipping or is Aisha not shipping? Because I'm pretty sure you just told him that we're not shipping to you. First of all, you don't have the authority to shut down another company. That's something we do. And collectively, we should agree on that. And two, take the personal part out of it. It's not the other person on the other line to tell them that we're not shipping to you. You're saying we're not shipping to Toyota is basically what you just said.
Right.
And as they put it into perspective, I sat there and I could just feel the egg running down my face.
Well, and it's another thing to add, and I can't remember if it was in Never Split the Difference or it was another book that I was reading, but the author at the time talked about always leaving an out, right? Because there are many different perspectives. It's very easy to get caught up in a myopic view that, well, I don't see how anybody could see it any other way than the way I'm seeing it. And then as soon as you do something like that, Brian, right, that you have this moment, oh, yeah, I didn't think about that. There is a different perspective on that. So looking at it from the perspective, I guess another way to put that is always look at it from a positive, expect the best intent out of somebody in the way you're writing it. But at the same thing, if you think about going through college, how many times was there a class or something offered that, hey, we're going to practice interviewing, we're going to practice all of this. Do the same thing on having those conversations or writing that email. Run it by somebody else just to get a different perspective. I can't tell you how many times that I've actually run it by my wife, that, you know, whether it's something technical, she'll go, I don't understand that. Well, if she doesn't understand that, then it's the general populace isn't going to understand it as well. Or you'll start to pick up some kind of emotional undertones or leverage the collective group around you.
Yeah. And yeah, great point there. Oh, sorry, Dan, you don't have to be in the same business or even understand what it is you do. Have somebody else read the email because they'll pick up on the emotional part of it.
Right.
Right. How do you get the emotion out of it?
Yeah, you actually went right where I was going to, around have an editor. Have an editor that's disconnected from it, that's not part of the process, that can read it as the recipient would read it. I think I've talked about this in the show. I've had the blessing in my career of working for a gentleman who ran the enterprise service desk, the customer support function for the organization. And God I learned what's that?
I said, God bless those people.
Absolutely. But also, it's important for us to understand the things that they have to do and deal with and the way they do them, because this is how people effectively communicate. A high-performing service desk will communicate. They will write, they will be able to read something and understand how the recipient will receive it, not how you intended it, but how it was received, and be able to weave in the important and salient points into that. They'll understand brevity. They'll understand where detail is needed. And all of those things are important in this topic as well. I think they're important to security professionals as a whole, because we are generally not so good at communicating. But wide swath, yes, there are those that are, no, they're not.
Speak for yourself, Dan. I'm great at communicating. Oh, wait.
And you're always right. but taking that time and thinking about how the message will land. I think this is a comment that comes out of the marketing world. How will this thing land? What will people see it as? How will they respond to it? The Chevy Nova still lives on in infamy as to a name that didn't work in South America for various reasons. Well, for one specific reason, that in Spanish, Nova means doesn't go. Not good name for a car. in Spanish speaking areas. So, but the concept is, I'm going to write this out. I'm going to see how it is, run it by somebody else, rehearse, look at their face, ask them for comments and feedback. Same with written emails. One, write the email you want to write, then write the email you should write.
Right.
There's no end to the number of times I've written the angry, flamey, oh my God, how could you email? But I've written it not in an email application. I've written it in somewhere else. I've written it out. I've gotten it out. And I start taking and highlighting the salient points, putting it into the email I should send. And then I give it to somebody else to read through it, to run through it. Same with career decisions, same with organizational changes. When I'm working on, larger scale organizational changes, I do run it by. I have a council of, a council of people that I trust and I know will give me honest feedback.
Yeah. Well, there's a classic case study if you look at it from a business perspective, right? If you look at Coca-Cola, new Coke versus old Coke and kind of the way that it resonated. And I'll leave that to anybody who wants to go read it. It's fascinating.
Were you even around for new Coke, Brian?
Well, hey, let's not go there. With the emotions around. Hey. So, all right. I want to take us back real quick because we're kind of down at the end of the line now. That you've decided you want to move on, you want to get into a new role, you need to have that conversation, which is great. I think we offered a lot of kind of insight into having that conversation, but we still have to get to choosing the path, right? I feel like we touched on it a little bit, and I think the three of us would agree that not every path leads to being a CISO, right? So
Not every path wants to end at a CISO.
Right.
To your point earlier, not everybody wants to be that. I'd argue that those that want it shouldn't be allowed to do so. But yes, not every path ends in the CISO role.
Yeah. And I think it's worth saying that it's okay to stay on the technical route. And for me, one of the coaching things I like to talk about is find your passion. Whatever you're passionate, go that way. And I know there's a lot of books coming up in college that talk about that, that as you're talking about picking a career, that if you choose it just for money, and I think it was Brian that you were talking about it, just looking at it from a revenue standpoint versus figuring out what makes you who you are and what you're passionate about, it's key to do the latter. Find your passion. What is it you love? And find ways to continue growing on that path. And if you want to stay the technical route, I know we've had other talks here. the security community, there is an amazing number of certifications. Now, there's a debate to be had on which ones are actually worthwhile versus which ones are just a piece of paper and a couple of letters in the signature of an email or tagline on LinkedIn.
After a very expensive boot camp. Don't forget that part.
Yeah, somebody's collecting money. But in that case, connect with those that have already gone down the path on how they got there, right? On which ones are worthwhile. And certainly, I know the three of us, feel free to reach out anytime. We can give you our opinions on which certifications matter versus which ones don't, but it's going to depend on the industry, vertical, even the geography, right? That, you know, if you look at East Coast versus West Coast, may get a little bit different point of view.
Yeah, yeah. And be careful walking into a situation where you're trying to sell yourself and say, well, look at everything I did. I got this, or I studied this, or I got these three certifications. Back up and when you're having that story, explain why you did it. Like, you know, as one of the reasons I went and got this certification, I was hoping to be able to provide this level of service to the company, or I was invested in learning more to help produce better results. You know, however you want to figure out why you did it, right? And if the why you did it is only for money, right? Like, I thought I would get paid more, then figure out how to reframe that, right? So that if you were the person receiving that same commentary from some staff that worked for you, how would you want someone to explain that to you, right? And I think it's putting yourself in the role, because one day, if that's what you're striving to do, you're going to be in that role listening to somebody else say that.
And the one thing I will caution as well, like just speaking for myself, from my perspective, that because somebody has a certification, you shouldn't use that as all of a sudden that now I'm an expert, I'm super knowledgeable in an area. There's still a lot to be learned in actually applying the elements of a certification. And I'll pick on auditors for this, that I've seen a lot of auditors that come out that, oh, I just got this certification, pick it, ISO or whatever it is, that all of a sudden you think in your mind that I've got everything figured out, but then you realize there's a whole practical application of the actual controls within the framework that you still have yet to learn. There's a big difference between ethereal knowledge on a certification and then the real world application that actually affects risk for an organization.
Same thing applies to university degrees. Theoretical degrees are hard to translate. They require effort to translate into practical experience. I want to, you know, a couple of things. Eric, you mentioned about things that you're passionate about. This is one of those places where I'll come off the old guy position of do the job, just get paid and do it the job that needs to be done, and say, yes,
that's a very Monty Python-esque voice.
What's that?
That was a very Monty Python-esque voice. That was well done.
Later in the blooper reel, you'll see the Bureau of Silly Walks. The idea of doing something that you're passionate about is one that is growing. It is one that is that to me is important. But on the flip side, I also want to say it is okay to take a job for money. It is okay to take a job that pays well. You may not enjoy it. You got to do it well, but it may not be what you love to do, but it fulfills a need. It pays the bills, things like that. That's still okay too. It doesn't always have to be find your passion. Sure. We all take those kind of steps in our career that are either lateral for a particular reason or a step back for a particular reason, or not the path you'd expect for a particular reason. Taking it because you need to pay your bills and it's something that's available in there, that's okay too. And sometimes taking those steps back or steps to the side will open up different doors. I keep hearing statistics about universities that are taking CS majors. There's large influxes of computer science majors, huge population, huge desire. I must admit, I'm not entirely sure the driver for that. But it's the case. And it can also become a hindrance to getting into the school. If you come down that path, you know, you're one of 20,000 people trying to apply for this particular 35 seats in a CS department. Contemplate whether something adjacent to it might get you into the school you want to go to and get you out the other end of the school you want to go to, but still with a similar outcome. Maybe it's not the exact same outcome, but something similar, or it'll open up different doors, or just right. be able to think laterally about these things.
Well, and I think you hit the nail on the head there, that it's kind of reframing perspective. Everything is an opportunity to learn. Positive or negative, it's an opportunity, right? If it's positive, it's something that is either beneficial to you or something you can learn from, and I'm going to employ that. I want to be like that. That is now something else in my toolbox. But the same thing happens on the negative side, that you learn this didn't work. I didn't like that. Therefore, I'm not going to do that. So it's kind of that reframing the perspective and how you go into that. And to Dan's point, it is okay to take jobs to learn. I mean, look, if just looking from the lens of security, it's a vast ocean of different paths and things to learn. Take a risk, take a new job to learn a new skill set. Maybe it's not for you. Then you choose that you realize that you can rule that out and you don't want to do that again. Or just maybe it might be an opportunity that you go, wow, I didn't realize that this is a great facet to security. I'm now going to pursue and head down that path.
Also, if you want to talk about how to get promoted, take the job no one else wants.
True.
Take the job in the organization that no one else wants, that they're trying to fill. Go do it. Kick ass at it. And when you're doing that, now you have a little more leverage. You say, I've done this thing. So my wife is a meteorologist, and she talks about placement at these field offices that do forecasting. And as I understand it, if you go to Anchorage, Alaska for a period of time, you then get your choice of other, of other places. It's remote. It's not, you know, people who live there love it, but you do the hard thing and then you get access to the thing you might want as a result. So the paths aren't always linear.
One thing as you guys were talking, it's just like, guys, remember the movie Slumdog Millionaire?
I do.
You could be the smartest person in the room, have 5 degrees, play trivia with your friends every night, show up and lose on question 5. But the person who ended up becoming the millionaire had all these weird life experiences, from twists and turns, from really difficult times that had happened in their life. And every time a question was presented to him, he could think back to something that happened in his life and be able to apply an answer to it.
Right.
So everything you do in life is important, even when you're failing. And even when it feels like what you're doing isn't important, there's little learning lessons or life moments, right, that at some point will apply later. Even if you think it's because A, this sucks, B, I failed, etc. Later in life, you're going to come across challenges, and you'll remember back to what you learned from that one and how to overcome it. And I know that sounds like so cliche, but until you've been in that position where something bad happened and then later in life we're able to apply it, just learn from everything it is you do and talk to people. The more you talk, and same thing with Slumdog Millionaire, some of the life lessons he learned were from conversations he had with elders, youngers, foreigners, etc., that he learned things, right, that he was able to apply later. So anyhow,
as long as it wasn't, also merged with the story of the movie Quiz Show, which is where it was all corrupted and fixed anyway.
Okay. I don't know. The philosophical question there, Brian, is that if you find yourself feeling that you're in the room and you're the smartest person, are you in the right room?
There is something to that. There is very much something to that statement.
Either A, if you're finding yourself the smartest person in the room, you're probably not the smartest person. And B, if you are the smartest person in the room, then by all means, find some smarter people to put yourself around if you want to grow, right? If you believe you're the smartest person in the room, like, what is smart, right? We could go down a whole path of, so it's in the eye of the beholder, right? And back to Slumdog Millionaire.
Is that why you wanted to talk to us yesterday, Eric? You were going to find a new room?
Too funny. Yeah, no, that's a great perspective, Brian. It really is. It's I think put another way is write nobody off. Right? The vast experiences, you'll be amazed that you'll be having a conversation with somebody today and go, you know, maybe from this conversation that I'm not going to take anything away. And then fast forward a week or two, a month, and then all of a sudden, given the context of the situation we're in, you'll draw something from it and go, oh man, it's like a light bulb turning on or a switch, right? That all of a sudden you connect two different viewpoints and it puts it in a different context and makes sense. It's take in life. There's amazing people around us everywhere.
And in that same vein, burn no bridges. We work in a very small community. The information security community is tiny, tiny, tiny. Yes, we want it to be larger. Join us. Come join the field. But it is small. You will run into the same people over and over. And this applies inside organizations too. Whether you're at the largest of Fortune 50 companies or you are at a smaller startup, you need to work with people and you will run into people again. If you're in the startup circles, you're going to see the same founders moving and creating new things. If you're in large organizations, you're going to see the same you're going to see VPs move around within an organization. You're going to run into these people again. So whatever you do, the methods you use to, you know, to communicate these things, it's going to come, you will have to deal with these people again. So burn no bridges.
Yeah. Yeah. To step back. And that's not just in the context of security. I think that's a rule of life to live by. The more and more just speaking for myself, it's fascinating. The more and more I connect with different people, you start to realize how small the world really is and how interconnected people are. Right. And it just, no matter what the emotion is, that it's not worth burning a bridge. You know, if you think about it, keep it in the context, if I go back to True North and defining who you are, nobody gets to choose who you are. No matter what happened, positive, negative, you have to continue to be you in every experience, in every situation, and make sure you stay true to it.
So this has been great, broad discussion. I get a lot of questions that are very specific. I'm in this job. What do I need to do to get the next one? We've talked about the how you communicate it when you think you're ready, but where do people start to turn to grow inside security, to grow from a SOC analyst up, to a support analyst up, base security engineer to the next level security engineer? Where do people go when they're working all day and don't necessarily have funds to go take large scale training courses outside the organization? We're seeing organizations cut things like training, as economic downturns happen. What are ways people can go to start to can do to take to start to grow themselves in those contexts?
I think one thing comes to mind for me is networking doesn't exist just outside the organization. You can network inside. And I've, you know, in a prior role, there was individuals that wanted to learn more about security, step into that realm, that were willing to take a small fraction of their personal time and shadow somebody. I'm just going to watch, or I'm just going to have a conversation. I think there's some opportunities there to connect within organizations, to start learning about different roles, to start gaining different perspective skill sets from those around you that are already performing some of those roles. Plus, there's a lot of free avenues to build up skill sets. I mean, for those that are listening, the podcast doesn't cost you anything other than time to listen. And this is just one from a high level perspective. There's a number out there that people going down the technical route that you can deep dive into some of the different technical aspects of security. At some point, there might be something called distilling security that might pop up. That would be another opportunity. There's opportunities around you. You just have to have kind of some understanding of the path that you want to head down, and then you could start to line up some of those different materials. But I agree. Not everything has to be a paid sum of money going through a boot camp or anything like that, Dan.
Yeah, and even mentorship, right? Like, you can get online and just Google the word cybersecurity mentorship, and you'll find a ton of different sites where you can get on. And it may feel out of the ordinary or obscure doing it because you've never reached out to somebody else to ask them for their advice, but also know that the person on the other line may have never mentored before, but they're looking to give back. And a lot of times their mentorship isn't about, like, specifically, here's what you need to do to get this, or here's what you need to do to get that. It's teaching the lessons they learned right? And then you sharing stories of where you're at, and they're able to help you. And at some point, as they're listening and you're listening, you're learning from each other. And you may say something that triggers, hey, this person that's mentoring you has a wide network of people in his network, right? Just like you guys said, it's a close-knit family. And they may be able to say, you know what? I know someone that's looking for someone to do that exact same thing. And you fit that role. And you can do it remote, right? Just by having that mentor, you might have just found yourself in your next position, right? Because that person was able to listen to you, feel the empathy, trust you. And then on your behalf, he's vouching for you. There's nothing stronger than that. You want to create, you know, not just a mentor, but you want to create someone that can vouch for you for life. Go get a mentor and show them that you're passionate, right? Just by saying that you want to get a mentor shows that you're willing to take that next step.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I like that mentality on put yourself out there. Now, I will, the caveat to that is just because you reach out to somebody doesn't mean they are the right mentor for you, yeah. Right? Having conversations, there's been certain people that I've talked with and realizing that kind of my perspective, my skill set may not lend itself to where they're going, but certainly that putting yourself out there allows for the connection to somebody else who would be a better fit for you. And until you put yourself out there, nobody's going to know you're looking.
I'd be remiss if I didn't mention MentorCore. MentorCore is a project I work on with a longtime friend of mine, Lisa Beth Lentini Walker. MentorCore.biz. The link is in the show notes. Yep. It's years of recordings, including Eric, of conversations with people in the security, compliance, risk, ethics, governance space around mentoring, all focused around mentoring, how they've mentored, the best advice they've gotten from mentors. Come take a look. Also, costs you nothing. Although in both cases, the cost of pressing that like button, pressing the subscribe button and telling your friends, you know that that doesn't cost you anything but time.
Right.
But it's a passion project and one because this mentoring is such a key part of career growth in this field, in these fields where we don't automatically, it's not our nature as technologists to look up and go, let's look around the organization and figure out how to grow in it. It's let's get our heads down. Let's do the guardian. Let's guard these organizations. That's the job we're here to do, but we need to do more of that. So take a look at MentorCore.
MentorCore is great. And then for women looking to get into technology or in technology, you know, WAMP's on the security side. MCWT is a great organization. Heck, I mean, there's even components that on CSA Detroit, trying to grow some of the connections with students in local colleges. There's a lot of opportunities out there, a lot of great people that are willing to connect you to either directly to do some mentorship or to be able to connect you with the right person that can help you grow.
Yeah. Well, unfortunately, gentlemen, we are out of time. Hopefully we've been able to help you listen and learn more about taking that next step now that you're inside the organization, or if you've been in the organization for a long time. As always, thank you, Eric and Brian, for a great debate, conversation, and friendship. And thanks to you, the listener. Thanks for being here. Thanks for being part of this community. If you like what you hear, tell your friends. We'd love to hear more. We also want to hear from you. What are your thoughts on topics? Today's topic was generated from a viewer comment. Send yours in to us as well, feedback@greatsecuritydebate.net. You can find us on the web, www.greatsecuritydebate.net, on Twitter, @securitydebate. And we have a YouTube channel, all the videos from all of these, including the wacky hand gesticulations and bad camera angles, are on our webs, on YouTube, youtube.com/@greatsecuritydebate. Thanks again for joining us, and we'll see you again on the next Great Security Debate.